With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, this is your spoiler warning. If you have an inkling to watch Love in the Time of Cholera, make sure you do it before you listen to this podcast. You don't have to watch it, though.
Peace. I hate the word.
I got one leg, you're gonna fuck it and take it.
Gonna play a little cornstarch on my werewolf, man.
Luigi Mario!
Hello and welcome to Mission Zach's Leguizamarama, a podcast where two people watch films or TV shows starring John Leguizamo, an actor they like. One of those people is me, Zach Ruane. You might know me from
You've got so much.
Do I?
Yeah, rip out something real.
What do you mean? What about
something from the heart?
Who you might know from, you know, being being quite a serious person.
Yeah.
And everything I do is very funny.
Yeah.
Very silly. But I'm quite a serious person and someone who thinks a lot and thinks too much.
Yeah.
But everything I do, that thinking is a barrier and it's a burden.
Yeah.
And I look at my life sometimes as like, turn off that brain. It's like, why not use that brain?
Yeah.
Not that I'm smart. I just think a lot. I think too much.
Okay.
And I'm not happy.
And I'm Mish Witrup, who you might know from being laughs aplenty 100% of the time because serious people are losers.
Mish and Zach.
Mish and Zach.
Mish and Zach are coming at ya. Mish talks about boobs and Zach talks about movies. Mish and Zach.
Which, funnily enough, makes this the perfect movie for both of us because it's just tits and film.
It is tits and film. What a cinematic experience. Is there anything to talk about before we just jump into cholera? Dive headfirst into the 2.5 hour experience that is Love and Cholera.
Oh, my God. There's something about a 2.5 hour film. You have to have made something real good.
Yeah.
What's a really good long movie?
Godfather.
How long's that?
3+.
Okay.
What
else is a really long movie? You got Titanic, obviously.
Titanic.
I think that holds up. Titanic holds
up. Do you
know,
past 2.5 hours, the length has to be like a part of it. Does that make sense?
Like Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, like it's in its length. Godfather is great because it moves at a snail's pace, and then by the end of the movie, you know, the main character is a completely different person and you never saw them shift.
Yes.
So it's like 3 hours of, like, nothing happening and then at the end you're like, oh, wow, a lot happened and I didn't even know.
Yeah.
3 hours should never be because you couldn't get it down to 1.5 hours.
I agree.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And then you've got movies like Gone with the Wind, which, although dated because I believe it was made in 1939 or 38, but the story holds up. Like, a lot happens.
Mm.
From start to finish, you've got a very different end to what you had at the beginning, and I believe it's 3 hours.
Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Same deal.
It's struggling to cram all of that story into its 3 hours. It's 6 hours of story in 3 hours. That's a great key idea.
Yeah.
Dark Knight, I think, is 240.
That's a long movie too, though. Dark Knight doesn't like.
No, I think it's brilliant.
You've got a lot of like the older movies. I'm looking them up right now. You've got like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long film. Once Upon a Time in America, long movie. And I think now We have all been destroyed and we need so much stimulation from a film.
Mm.
I've talked about this before, about how Raging Bull is amazing. It's such an incredible movie. But it was boring for me when I first watched it because I was so used to movies having big things happening constantly all the time, and Raging Bull is often just kind of like
Well, do you know, rolling I think as along, well, you know? Those movies are meant to be watched in a cinema. You're meant to, like, they are assuming you're in a dark room with no distractions, nothing else to do.
Just you and the film.
And that's a different thing entirely to
Lord of the Rings.
That's a different thing entirely to watching Raging Bull on TV, double screening. Like, it's sort of sitting in it.
Mm.
I saw... what was the one, Martin Scorsese's one on Netflix that was like 340?
Oh, The Irishman.
Right? Yeah. And that could have lost 20. But
I've not seen it because of the length.
Yeah,
I was
right.
Like, that's a commitment.
So I saw that at the movies. I saw that. I saw a screening of it because there were a few. And I was like, fuck, I really enjoyed it. And because it is... an entire man's life. He starts at 20 and he gets to like 80, and it's really, really a very long period of time. And, you know, for all the faults in that movie, and there are a few, like there is an old man with a young face for the bulk of the movie. But sitting in a cinema, you get the length, right? You go, oh, it's about when he's 80 at the end of the movie, you've felt that entire life, right? But I don't think that movie would work on Netflix because then it becomes like a TV show, then you're stopping and starting.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
And then it's more like a four-part miniseries that doesn't actually, you know, it's a different thing. It's interesting because people are like, you can watch it in four parts, and Scorsese was like, nah.
Nah, don't do that.
It's a different thing.
Tell you what is a very good movie to see at the cinemas is Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, great, fantastic.
Yeah, I saw Mortal Kombat.
The new one?
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
A couple weeks ago at the cinemas.
Yeah. Do they have Mortal Kombat in it?
Like the characters.
Do they have combats that are mortal?
Like sort of.
Because I've heard there's not much Mortal Kombat in Mortal Kombat.
No, there's one, like the final scene is a combat that seems quite mortal. But so funny story. I booked tickets ahead of time to that movie because I was like, this is something nice for my partner. I'm doing something selfless because I couldn't give a fuck about Mortal Kombat. But I'm like, you know what? We're going to go see a movie. I'm going to book a movie that's right up his street. So I was like, hey, baby, I bought you a present. And he was like, oh, what'd you get me? And I was like, I got you a ticket and me a ticket to see Mortal Kombat Hoyt's Melbourne Central. And he goes, oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Like, awesome. Yeah, cool. Like, that's a Saturday and we can do a bit of shopping beforehand and maybe go get, like, a bit of lunch. And I'm like, yeah. And I was a bit like, oh, you don't seem too happy about this. I was like, oh, have you seen it? Like, it's only been out for a bit. He's like, no. It's just like, I'll be honest with you, Shell. Like, I'm not really into Mortal Kombat. I was like, oh, well, fuck. So we went and saw a movie that neither of us really wanted to see.
That's great.
But mind-blowingly entertaining
on
the big screen. I'm sure if it was on Netflix and I put it on, I'd be like, this movie sucks. But on the big screen, it is pure entertainment. And we have spoken previously about movies we like. And mine is, it's not necessarily about the structure of it or why it was made or what the meat. I just want to be entertained. Mortal Kombat did that. It's great. I love a cinema experience like that. Beautiful. So highly recommend Mortal Kombat. Truthfully, in terms of entertainment, solid four. A solid 4 out of 5.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do you know what I watched the other week that's also quite a long movie that I was like, I'd love to watch this on the big screen? Is Contact with Jodie Foster.
Oh, my God, I haven't.
Have you not seen Contact?
Wait, which one's Contact? That sounds, just by the title alone, at Jodie Foster, I feel like...
You've seen it?
No, I feel like I've seen it, and if I haven't, it was made for Mish.
Oh, my God. So, it's about... well, I don't know, it's a sci-fi.
Okay, I'm out.
But it's also not.
Okay,
it's actually
back
like,
in.
do you know what? I think, I don't want to give away too much. If you've not seen it,
It's actually one not to really give away, but I think you could, you might really enjoy it.
Is it on Netflix?
It's on, no, I think I bought it. I think we were flicking through it and I was like, I really want to watch Contact starring Jodie Foster. Yeah. You know when you have one of those moments?
Yeah, yeah.
But basically it's about, she is someone who listens for patterns in radio waves coming from out of space to hear from aliens, like if there's an other life, and she's this really promising scientist, and people are like, why are you wasting your time on this? And then, you know, maybe they hear something and the journey goes from there. But it's really strange because it's a massive budget movie that's more character drama than anything else.
Yeah.
It's but then it goes it goes places that you don't expect it to go.
Okay.
I think the less you know, the better.
Okay.
But I think that's a movie where I was watching it. There's this moment. It's purely a moment that's not like big budget. It's just this like close up of like her face, I think. And I was just like, fuck, that would be great on a big screen. Like that's a shot. That big close up of her face is meant for a big screen. I think that's, I love those moments. There's certain films that are just like, Eighth Grade was one that I found surprisingly good for the big screen as well.
I reckon. So I saw Interstellar last year for the first time.
Yeah.
Didn't like it.
No, it's fine.
Because it's sci-fi. But I reckon I would have enjoyed it more on a big screen.
Yeah. That was a big screen one.
Yeah, because I think just on my little 38-inch dick. No. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
That's so funny.
That was supremely immature of me.
That's so funny. It's a sexy movie. We're about to get to a sexy movie.
Yeah, I needed to bring up a 38-inch dick
because of the film we're about to watch.
And let's be honest, I just finished watching it. I'm horny.
I'm not.
No, this made my vagina close up like crazy. Before we talk about it, I will say, just talking about purchasing movies on YouTube, I'd never done it before this podcast, but obviously we have to do it sometimes. And since I discovered that you could rent films on YouTube, I have rented a couple.
Yeah, I do that. Like I'm quite the fiend now for like.
Yeah.
We have so many fucking like streaming things.
Yeah.
And we'll scroll through all of them and then like rent.
Yeah.
Contact starring Jodie Foster.
Oh, no, I get it. I rented a movie that I saw when I was like maybe 13 or 14. And I remember loving it when I was younger. And I'm like, fuck, I've got an inkling to watch that. And it's called The Good Son with Elijah Wood and Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, I know of it. I've not
seen it. Oh, and then I rented it on YouTube.
Movie ever.
I rented it on YouTube. It doesn't hold up. It's not as good as I remember. But
kind of Damien Omen vibes, isn't it? Like one of them's an evil child.
Yes, and one of them's a good child. Yeah, and the evil, no one thinks the evil child is evil, but he tries to drown his sister in a lake. And
yeah, I remember. I have seen it. I saw it on the telly.
he shoots a bird.
Yeah.
And stuff. Yeah, it's very much like one of those movies that would have been on it like after the 8:30 movie. Yeah. You know, the 8:30 movie on Channel 7.
Yeah, that's I think when I saw it.
Yeah. And
I
then,
think it might have even been like my parents were watching it and it was like, go to bed. And I was like, oh, this is scary.
Yeah, you watch like Forrest Gump at 8:30 and then come 11 o'clock The Good Son comes on.
Yeah.
But I would recommend it, again, pure entertainment, but not a great film. But I am really into renting movies on YouTube, which is ridiculous.
But no, I hear what you're saying just coming back to Interstellar. Yes, that is a good one on the big screen. Interstellar is very, very, very similar. It's a great, it has a lot of good stuff, that film.
Mm.
2001 A Space Odyssey is a sort of like a big inspiration for Interstellar. And that's a movie that the Astor Cinema, you know, the Astor in St Kilda. So it's like a big single screen picture house for listeners not from Melbourne. And they used to own a 70 mil print of that film, and they would do it once every 6 months and do seasons of it and stuff. And it is like, that's a film where it's funny. There's older films where I go, like, people are like, oh, that's boring. It's like, go see it on a big screen. Because when you see it on a big screen, that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
They didn't know that their film would ever be seen on something smaller than a big screen. Anything pre-1980, they didn't know, like, it was only ever for the big screen. So when you're watching it on your little TV, it's not, that was never a part of their decision making.
That's a very good point. A very, very good point.
Do you know, fun, well, last thing before we talk about fucking Love and Cholera, I am watching X-Files.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great. X-Files was a show that my mum was really into when I was like 8.
Yeah.
So I saw it a lot, but I couldn't tell you anything that happens. But fuck, I should watch that too.
I'm telling ya. Because I was the same. I'd watched it a lot. It was in my periphery. Mm. I knew the character. I'd seen episodes. Mm. But
you loving it?
Loving it.
Oh, that's
only
great.
Only like 5 episodes in. I've never seen, other than Twin Peaks, a show come out of the gate so, like, perfectly.
Mm.
Like, it's literally 4 or 5 episodes in, and it's like, this is season 2, season 3 level of they know their characters, they know what this show's about. Like, it's just, I've never seen a show so sure of itself from the top.
Do you know what other show does that?
Yeah.
And we got to give it some credit, is True Blood.
Right.
Have you ever seen it?
No.
Okay. Season 1 of True Blood, I rewatched that in lockdown, 2020, one of our many, and it fucking is so good for that. It builds every character perfectly. You're invested in everyone, even the cunts. And I remember rewatching season 1 and then didn't watch further beyond that because season 1 is kind of like, is easily the best season. But it's so good at doing that. And it's also another reason why I dick on about Prison Break so much, because similarly, Prison Break is very good at building a character quickly so you know exactly what they're about. Even though like 80% of the people in the Prison Break can't act, it's just very good at that.
But here's what I'll say, though, about X-Files that's distinct from all of those things is all of the ones I said Twin Peaks, you said Prison Break and True Blood.
Yeah.
No, but they're all the same kind of ilk. But all of them fell apart very quickly. Mm-hmm. Within a season, by season 2, it was like, what are we doing here?
Yes.
A show usually that comes out of the gate strong doesn't have legs. X-Files, I remember the latter seasons. It gets pretty crazy. Like, But it came out of the gate strong and had 10 seasons.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
And that's the thing. You're watching it and it's just like, it's the setup. It's so clearly, you know, because the whole thing is Mulder it believes and Scully is the skeptic, right? And I thought...
Is Scully Gillian Anderson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's Mulder and Scully, and he believes in aliens, and she's like a skeptic. And I was like...
Queen.
And I was like, oh, this is going to be like really weird, and it's going to get weird really quickly. Like, they've seen aliens every episode.
Mm.
Why is she still a skeptic? But like, it from the top is like, it's not that she's a skeptic per se. It's not that she doesn't believe in aliens. It's that... She doesn't assume.
Yeah.
She uses empirical evidence. So it's like there's almost an element. Like I think within a season she'll have seen enough aliens to be like, look, Mulder, it could be aliens. We believe in aliens. But let's not assume here. And it's like it's just great. It's so good.
That's so good.
And the reason why I was going to say is that they filmed it. I was like watching it. I'm like, wait, this is from 1992 and it's in widescreen. Have they like cropped it? And apparently when they made the film – I think this is so interesting and it isn't and I need you to change the topic as soon as I've said it.
Yep, sure, no problems.
I was like, why is this in widescreen? Because like The Simpsons recently on Disney Plus, there was a bit of controversy because they were chopping off the top and the bottom to make it fit our widescreen TVs, but actually the image is meant to be a square and that was ruining the visual joke sometimes.
Are you serious?
Twin Peaks is the same. Like TV used to be shot in the square and... If you're like a, you know, as the director originally intended it or the showrunner kind of person, actually with TV from that era, even if you've got a widescreen TV, you probably want to get like, not the square, it's like 4:3. Like you want to get a 5, whatever, like that kind of ratio.
Mm.
Whereas X-Files was widescreen. I'm like, that's really weird. And then I looked it up and they shot everything for both. They like shot it in widescreen, but then knew they were going to crop it. They were like in 1991, 92, they were like, there's going to be widescreen TVs within the next 10 years. So let's make sure we have this.
Clever cookies.
Isn't that like, and it like makes my viewing experience.
I don't think that was, you've said much duller shit than that.
I think that's, well, I think I sold it.
You did.
You
had me from the first word all the way down to the end.
I knew how boring that was as a fact. I knew I had to sell it. Like, but yeah, they shot it in wide for the, but like, and then they cropped it for the TV. Then, knowing that one day it would be wide, and now I get to enjoy the show in widescreen. Anyway, X-Files, top notch. Give it a go. We can watch it. We can chat about it.
I'd love that. We still. I'm still waiting for you to either invite yourself over to my house or invite me over to yours so that we can watch Funny Girl together.
Yes.
I haven't seen Funny Girl in years, and I miss it. I was listening.
I've never seen Funny Girl.
I was walking my giant puppy yesterday, and I was listening to the Funny Girl soundtrack as I walked. So if you saw me walking my puppy and I had them tunes in, I was listening to Barbara Streisand singing Don't Rain on My Parade.
That's great.
It's great walking music.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Should we talk about tits dipped in cholera?
So can I? No, I've got to. Anyway, you read it. Read away.
As what year was this film? I didn't even think to fucking look at it. 2007. So my first year out of high school. That was my community theatre year.
Yeah, that's very funny.
Yeah. Thanks. Funny. We'll discuss that later. So this film is called Love in the Time of Cholera. Mm-hmm. It's an adaptation from a book. Mm-hmm. I don't know who'd buy, but the director is Mike Newell, mm-hmm. if you can believe that.
I can believe that it was not – that it was a white old British man.
Yeah, you can believe that.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm being too clear in my opinion.
I wonder what Zach thinks. All right. Love in the Time of Cholera tells the story of Florentino, played by Javier Bardem, and also someone much younger than Javier Bardem that looks absolutely nothing like him. Florentino loves Femina. He confesses his love to her, and she says she loves him too. A few years later, he says he loves her again, and she says she does not love him anymore, but instead loves Benjamin Bratt. This upsets Florentino, This upsets Florentino so much, he spends the rest of his life obsessing over her while also having sex with lots of different women. When Benjamin Bratt dies, Florentino tells Femina that he loves her again on the same day of Benjamin Bratt's funeral. Femina says, "Get the fuck out of my house," because Florentino's timing is beyond shit. Florentino is sad and has sex with lots more women. Femina kind of changes her mind, shows Florentino her saggy breasts, and they have old people sex. John Leguizamo plays Femina's dad. He is controlling and loves rich men. He wears well-fitted suits and cute little hats. He's not in this film very much, but quite a bit at the start, which gives us hope, but we are let down.
So I want to say for this film, it goes for 2 hours and something.
Minutes. 2 hours, 20 minutes.
I said to Mish, I want to read
what?
Our conversation.
Okay.
So probably next week or the week after we're going to do Waiting for Godot.
We really want to. I want to make sure that we have access. To be honest, I haven't really looked properly into...
I've had a bit of a look.
I think we can.
Yeah, it's fine. It's like,
we'll find a way.
I don't think it's geo-blocked or anything.
Mm.
So I said... but Godot goes for 3 hours. And we decided yesterday to watch something, and I said, "Hey, Mish, you know, we're both pretty busy. Have you watched Godot yet? If not, want to go with a normal length movie to watch tonight?" And you said, "Yep, that's good for me. Cool, cool." And then you said, "Let me have a look at the list."
There it was between two films.
Yeah. And then it was between two films. It was between a movie that, this is very funny to me, it's between Rage.
Yep.
Which was like Godot is people looking at a camera talking. Mm-hmm. You picked a movie that is people looking at a camera talking for an hour and a half or a 2.5 hour movie.
Look, I usually...
You did the work. No, I'm with you 100%.
No, well, no, I can't really take credit for doing the work. There wasn't much work behind it. I usually pick the films in advance.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Yeah.
And same. Then I was like, oh, shit.
I think
shit.
We needed a week. You yeah. Know, it was one
I was like,
things.
Oh, shit, we have to record a podcast in 2 days. I was like, Zach, like, what? No, you messaged me and you're like, what are we going to do? I was like, fuck. I was like, well, I looked at his list and those were two films that we hadn't looked at. Because we've chatted a lot about doing a lot of his other movies, but we might want someone on at the time or we might want to do it at a certain point. So I didn't look up running times. I was like, they both look average. Let's just smash out an average film. I had no idea that Love in the Time of Cholera on Prime was 2 hours and 20 minutes.
I just think it's funny. This is where I go, I agree with you on that. It's funny that we're like, yeah, let's not do Godo, which is a three-hour movie of people looking at a camera. Let's either do this movie, which is people monologuing at a camera, or this movie.
That's fucking long.
Which is 3 hours. I really struggled to
aren't
decide,
you glad,
but I went
though,
with cholera.
Aren't you glad
no.
that we've got...
Whatever your sentence is about to be the answer.
I'm personally glad we got this one
out of the way. Go.
I'm personally glad we got this one out of the way. I watched the trailer... And whoever edited the trailer tried really hard to sell this film because the trailer makes it look like a jaunty, enjoyable film.
I can imagine the 2007 trailer.
Yeah.
Columbia, 100 years ago.
Yeah.
This
Florentino
summer,
loves
a love
Firmino.
Story.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd never read the book. I'd never heard of the book. I had no idea what this film was about. All I knew was the trailer. And then the opening scene of this film is Benjamin Bratt climbing up a tree, falling off the tree and dying.
In old people makeup.
And some
everyone,
of the worst.
Everyone.
Oh, my God.
Can I just say everyone in this, like everyone in this scene, it's Benjamin Bratt, it's this other person, it's everyone looks like Winona Ryder at the start of Edward Scissorhands.
Edward Scissorhands. Yes.
I'm an old lady.
It is some of the worst makeup. No offense, but it is not good. You can literally see the cheek.
Do you know old people,
implants?
Old people makeup is. Remember because I was a big Lord of the Rings fan and they did a bit of that. It's apparently some of the hardest makeup to do.
I can imagine.
Because. When you get old, you start to sallow, like you lose stuff. Mm. So it's hard to add to a fresh. She was tough because she's like got a very baby face, plump. That's not how a person ages. Like things.
Well, hers was also like she's got to age, but let's keep her hot though.
Yeah.
Like, we'll make sure that she stays hot.
Javier Bardem looks great old. It works for him, but Benjamin Bratt.
Javier Bardem looks great old, but it still looked like stage makeup.
Yeah.
And
do you know the word? Oh, sorry, go.
Stage makeup is so different from film makeup. I don't mean to mish-splain to everybody, but it is like ridiculously different.
That's the difference between a close-up to a back of the row. The reason for stage makeup is to convey something to the back row.
Yeah.
The reason for film makeup is usually to...
Because you're with them. It's meant to be real. This, I'm not up the back. I'm sitting on my couch watching this on Prime. I don't need to be able to see where the little bit of cheek that they've added to Javier Bardem's face attaches to his real face. It was bad. And all the makeup was grey. Like, it was just not... The makeup was so bad.
Can I say, though, do you know the worst old person makeup in cinema history, in my opinion?
Who?
Guess. I want you to guess.
The worst old people makeup.
I don't know why I'm making this a guess.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of movies that have old people makeup.
I'll tell you, J. Edgar. Have you ever seen J.
No.
Edgar? Oh.
I'm going to look it up right now.
My God. Armie Hammer.
Oh,
no comment on that.
Yeah.
On that stuff, on that whole Armie Hammer thing. But Armie Hammer is this buff, big, strong man. But see, Leonardo DiCaprio done old looks bad. Armie Hammer looks like the old man in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
God!
Like, He's too big.
That's insane.
He's too big of a man. Do you know what I mean? Like, old people don't stay that big. They, like, get little and crimply.
Oh, God, that's bad. Yeah. That's really bad.
They did it really well on The Avengers.
They do it well in How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
Oddly enough.
Have you seen have you seen the latest Avengers Endgame?
I've never seen an Avengers
movie. Well, in that they do it with like a bit of computer as well. They like they have an old spoiler alert, an old Captain America. And they apparently I was watching some of how they did it. They got Chris Evans to perform it. Then they got an old man to perform it like straight after him. And then they composited them. They put Chris Evans' face with CGI old people on the old man's body. And, like, that's the way to do it.
Oh, I would say so. Do you know what I love, just talking about, like, when you get an actor and you age them in a film, when they put in different actors who are older, but then they dub them with the voice of the actor?
I've never seen this in
my life. Oh, my God. It's in League of Their Own.
Wow.
So in League of Their Own, Gina Davis as an older person.
That's ridiculous because the nine times out of ten, the part that works the least is the voice.
Yeah. So Gina Davis's character. No. That's what. Oh, wait. No, wrong.
So
Gina Davis is in A League of Their Own. She is arguably the protagonist in that film. Then at so right at the start of the film and then right at the end, it's Gina Davis aged about 40 years and they've got a completely different actor in for that role, but they've dubbed her with Gina Davis's voice. Choice. They also do it in Thirst Wives Club, but the opposite. So they have Goldie Hawn and Stockard Channing, Diane Keaton and Bette Midler as younger people, but dubbed with Bette Midler's
Amazing.
Voice and Diane Keaton's voice, and it's so funny. Oh, that's so funny. I would have preferred that. Like, I would have preferred an old dude playing old Benjamin Bratt with Benjamin Bratt's voice than this clusterfuck.
Well, the thing I was going to say, like, the one note, do you want to know the one note I wrote down in this 2 hours and 40 minutes was Javier Bardem plays every age but his own.
Ever. And you've got, I'll credit you to this. This is funny as shit.
I broke my own rule, the whole don't comment.
Well, yeah, I was really surprised.
I couldn't. I was an hour in and I was
Zach
like,
doesn't let me message him during films anymore because A, he's usually not seen them yet because I watch them before he does. And B, it ruins it. Like, we like to save it for the pod, right? So, my opinion of this film, Zach has had no idea about a film that we're talking about. Like, Zach doesn't know my opinion of a film until we're sitting down and we're recording it. So, you guys find out. Pretty much like the same way Zach finds out, right? Last night, without discussing it, we were both watching the movie at the same point at the same time.
In like unison
which,
almost.
By the way, Zach, very cute.
Do you want to know the funniest, Leia?
Yeah.
I'm trying to get fitter for like live performance and stuff.
Mm.
So I'm trying to do 10,000 steps a day. And I was watching the movie on a treadmill.
Oh, that's so 80s of you.
I know. And it was tough. I mean, it would have been so much easier to just be like, bah. But I was like moving. So like, it was keeping me actively engaged.
That's so funny.
Anyway, that's just a funny layer.
No, I love that.
Add to it all.
And Zach messages me. And what did you say? You were just like.
I messaged you. I didn't message you an opinion. It was just as I watched it. So. This is really like this has to have some context if you've not seen the film. So they start the movie as they're old and then it goes back.
Yes.
Right? So they do old people makeup and then it goes back to them in like their 20s, right? Javier Bardem at this point is like 40, 45 as an actor, right? So they're like, well, he's too old to play this part.
Of a, like a essentially 21-year-old man.
A young man in love and all of that. So, and this makes sense. They've done it many times. They cast a young actor to play the part, but they didn't recast
anyone else.
So the love interest is the same actress. John Leguizamo plays her father.
Yeah, same guy.
And And then there's not even like a great jump in time. It's literally
3 years. It's 3 years. So he's gone from 21 to 25. No, that's four.
But that's the vibe. Like, he literally goes from this 20-year-old young actor to Javier Bardem.
Yeah, and Zach just messaged me and said, maybe she suddenly realizes she didn't love him because he became a 45-year-old man in the space of one trip away.
Because she just goes, I don't love you anymore.
I'm like, it's like, because I get it as well. Like, that's a different man standing in front of you.
It was the strangest choice. And it's like, you just age him up, change it. I don't think I've ever seen someone more. Well, no, I think he's great once the character's age appropriate. I think Javier Bardem is really good from 2 hours in.
I'll be honest, I like Javier Bardem, No Country for Old Men. Brilliant.
Brilliant.
I can do it too. He's incredible. In this film, he has one emotion the entire film. The entire film. There's no – the whole film is just one standard emotion. Like, there's nothing to it. There's nothing happens. It's just man obsesses over woman he can't have and has sex with a lot of other women. And that's kind of it. There's no – there's nothing to it. Should we talk about breasts?
Well, we should absolutely talk about breasts, but I do just want to say, like, if what we're describing sounds ludicrous, it's more ludicrous than you can imagine.
Yeah.
It's like, imagine, what's the one with,
what have you done?
The Cowboys in Love. Beautiful, beautiful movie.
Brokeback Mountain.
Brokeback Mountain. It's like if Jake Gyllenhaal's character is played by like Tobey Maguire for 20 minutes.
Yeah. And it's like if Brokeback Mountain was a pantomime.
Do you know what it is? It's like if everything happens up on the mountain and it's Jake Gyllenhaal and then they come back and everyone else stays the same. It's still Anne Hathaway. Yeah.
That scene where Jake Gyllenhaal comes back and they have Pash for the first time underneath the house. But it's just
now he's played by Tom Selleck. That's the one character they've decided to make 40 years old. That is, and I am not joking.
It's so
that's
funny.
That's the choice. Everyone else is the same.
The director wanted Javier Bardem to play Florentino so badly.
I think the money people.
Were like, we need Javier. But then when they looked at it, it's like, he cannot play 20. He can't do it. It's like, well, then just replace him. Should we replace it? We don't have the money to replace everyone. We're paying for Javier Bardem. It's
crazy.
Insane.
It is, and it's like this. So, but the way it plays out for me is spectacular because I don't know ages here, but I think I can confidently say this. So, John plays the father of this girl, and someone else plays Javier Bardem's part, and he's like, "You can't marry this boy." And then in the next scene, that boy is now the same age, if not older,
John Leguizamo. Yeah, it's so strange. Like, sacrifice Javier Bardem. Or
rewrite the characters.
Yes, 100%.
Just make him, like, 30.
Recast the three other characters that you didn't age. Like, because there's not a lot of characters in the part where everyone's younger.
Do the Moonlight thing or that one with Carey Mulligan where they play clones. Just have different actors, all different. But also don't do that.
Also, don't make this film.
And then literally, so this is what happens, right? The guy is 20. He's in love with her. Then Javier Bardem at 40, 45 plays this character at 25. And then we're travelling along for a bit and then there's a jump in time about an hour and a half in. And then the character is older than Javier. He's suddenly like 50, 55.
Yeah.
Javier Bardem never plays
his age
in this film ever.
At no point does Javier Bardem not have hair colouring in his hair. He's got some sort of black monstrosity when he's 24, and then when jump in time is 55, he has a white hairspray.
If they had flipped Javier Bardem and Benjamin Bratt.
Oh, that's good.
Like, Bam, done, easy. Yeah,
you've still got
the Oscar winner in the film. Just and Benjamin Bratt could play that character.
Fine.
You know, from 20 through.
Yeah.
You need someone that can play that character. That flip right there, that works.
I wonder if
Johnny Legs could have played the character. He did
true.
It. He did that character. He's done versions of that character in the one with the matchsticks. The hopelessly romantic character.
Oh, Pyromaniac's Love Story.
Pyromaniac's Love Story. It's a comparable kind of character. Just this like love and passion and and Sueno.
Sueno. He's done Sueno. This is it made me mad.
Sorry, go. You want to talk about the boobies.
I think we need to address the boobies.
We have to talk about the boobies.
Not only so this film had Javier Bardem and tits. That was the two main characters in this film.
I've never seen so many boobs in a movie. And boobs, like boobs.
Yeah.
I don't use the word boobs often, but there's a lot of boobs in this movie.
A lot of boobs. And we're not talking side boob.
Like boobs.
We're not talking someone's back when they're naked, so the idea that, oh, there's some boobs. It's just like there are boobs in this film.
And just like there's a couple, there's some butts here and there. But
no,
like,
it's not.
But there's not a lot. There's
I didn't like, see one bottom.
We see Javier Bardem's bottom once. Yeah. But this is what I'm like. It's there's no side boob. There's no back. There's no bum. It's just like a lot of boobs. Like that's the nudity we see is boobs.
We don't see a lot of kissing. We don't see a lot of hugging or foreplay. It's just boobs.
There's so many boobs in this movie. It's I just want to say, generally speaking, this is a movie, and I imagine the book. You said it. You're like, I imagine the book's really good. There's. I remember reading a thing. I think it's Thunderball. No, it's another one. There's a Bond movie. Apparently, one of the best Bond movies.
Mm-hmm.
Came from one of the worst Bond books. And I remember reading this like in-depth thing once where they said, it's a fascinating thing that some of the best films tend to come from some of the worst books and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's something in when you adapt a book, you can't be too loyal to it.
Yeah.
And you said it. You were like, I'm sure it's a good book. And by all accounts, it's a great book. I've not read the book. But this felt like the script was just the book.
Yeah.
Like they just rocked up to set and they were just like said the stuff.
Yeah. I have not read this book either, but you also said outside, I'm sure that this book in its day, I don't know when it was written.
80 something.
Great. Was probably quite sexy. Intimate.
Yeah.
Like I think that the description of Florentino and Fermina's relationship would be so there would just be a lot of detail to it and you would feel that relationship. But without that level of detail, all we've got is boobs.
this is the plot, right?
Yeah.
You've said it, but the plot is hot, sweaty, 1800s Colombia. Beautiful young man loves a beautiful young woman.
Yeah, forbidden love.
She marries someone else who is also beautiful.
So and rich.
So he then goes and has
meaningless
sex. And he takes his love and he puts it into something pointless. And then it's 30 years in sweaty Colombia, beautiful Latino people making love. it's the contrast. It's all the kinds of love.
Yeah,
you know, it's the idea of physical love and versus fucking versus. It is the most intensely erotic elevator pitch I've ever heard.
Yeah,
and the least sexy movie I've ever like.
They took all of that. Everything you just said so beautifully. By the way, that
thank
was beautiful.
You.
Everything you just said. They took all of that and they mashed it up. And they turned it into boobs.
There's a bit in the movie where I checked out, which is the first sex scene between the love interest and Benjamin Bratt.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's meant to be awkward. It's meant to be uncomfortable because that's not the person she was meant to lose her virginity to. It was meant to be, right? But it's not meant to be like licking their hands to finger each other.
Yeah.
It's just like, ugh.
Yeah.
Like, and there's scenes in it that are meant to be, like, I think they're meant to be sexy. And I'm just like, ugh.
Well, so it's not trusting that your audience or your viewer has had sex before. Like, do you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
just like, we'll show them what, like, it's just awkward. Like, it's just, it's, yeah.
I'm talking, like, licking hands and jerking each other off. And,
yeah.
And, like, I'm all for that. I love short bus. You know what I'm saying? I'm happy to go there. Like, I can go further than this. Mm-hmm. But there's something about this. It's an intensely sexless film
mm-hmm.
with a lot of sex in it. Does yeah. that make sense?
Oh, 100%. 100%.
It's a lot. Like, I was sitting watching the last hour in my lunch break. Just like going, ugh.
Yucky.
It's
just any opportunity they have to show a boob, they show a boob, and they create opportunities in which people can have their boobs out.
And, like, no back, beautiful no. back,
and
nothing, nothing.
Every sex scene is just shot front on. like you're watching it. But watching really bad sex.
You're never in it. You're never no. in the sex. That's such a good point. You're never in it. You're always just watching it.
Yeah.
You're always just watching the sex.
Yeah.
And it's just like.
What's a movie that you think has beautiful sex scenes in it then?
Oh, that is tough. It's a tough one.
It's a really, like, cause as you, I was thinking about it, it's like, is there anything, I've probably said it before on this podcast, I think one of the sexiest scenes in film is in Dirty Dancing.
Mm.
And it's their first, like when Baby and Patrick Swayze have their first intimate moment together outside of dance. And they, like, she's like, I can't leave this room because I don't want to be anywhere else except with you. And then Cry to Me comes on and they dance together. And to me, it's so hot because it's everything you don't see. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know they're going to fuck. like, no, but the dance is so well done and Patrick Swayze is so fucking shredded.
He's like.
He looks like a cheese grater. Like. no, but, and then he takes off her top and then it shows maybe 2-3 seconds of them in bed together.
Yeah.
And it's just, in my opinion, a perfect, because they don't need to show the audience because they did a good enough job of building up the chemistry
yeah.
between those two characters that the intensity of that moment pays off without having to show Javier Bardem's ass and multiple boobs.
It's like, and I feel like I don't want to be like prude o'clock here. Like I said, Short Bus is a movie that like shows the whole thing. Have you ever seen Short Bus?
I have not.
It's like a lot, right? And it's really full on, right? It really is like it shows everything, right? But it works. It works. Mm. Whereas there's something about this, like, it's just icky.
Yeah,
It's just like, I'm all for, but you've got to have the passion and the camera and the movie. I feel like the book, I haven't read the book, but I feel like it just was like scenes from the book.
Yeah.
For 2.5 hours.
And yeah.
Like, then then they fuck.
Yeah.
And then people get cholera.
No, that's, oh my God, happens. That's nail on the head. Because in those kind of books, and I'm thinking like the Bronte sisters, and it's wordy, wordy, wordy. They're so hard to turn into film
yeah.
because it's everything you don't see. It's all the stuff they describe.
It's an internal
thing that they have that a good book creates.
Yeah.
And this film did not think about that before they made it. And they just, whoever made this film wanted to make a sweaty, sexy Colombian love story.
Yeah.
And all they made was a movie with boobs and Javier Bardem. And true bless that. Them for trying.
But it is. It's like it's the internal. I'm sure there were these scenes, these moments where I'm like, in the book, I reckon what's going on inside characters is it profound.
They're,
but what's happening between the characters
is not
dramatic.
How about the last bit? I mentioned it in the blurb where she's like, you're not going to like what I'm about to show you. And he was like, show me anyway. And she takes off her top and she's got saggy titties now because she's old. And he's like, no, they're sick. Like, I love your Sega tears. It is so weird in the movie. But I'm sure in the book is this beautiful moment of the love of his life that he has thought about every second of every day since the second he saw her, 53 years later, has removed her clothing for him. Is just this weird scene between two old people, except two young people with old people makeup, and a weird breastplate that makes it look like this very beautiful actress has saggy titties. And that's all it was to me.
It's literally like it's adaptation. You know what I mean? Mm. Like it's that thing of, I think I've said this before, but Sondheim, you know, the musical. Have I said this before? Tell me if I've said it before.
I don't think you've mentioned Sondheim.
So Sondheim, before he adapts something into a musical, his question is, will this story benefit from becoming a musical? Mm. Why am I not do I like the story?
Yeah.
Why am I adapting this story into a musical?
Well, I fucking wish that the creators of this film had had a chat with Sondheim.
Because it's literally just like you have to, like, there were just these moments where I'm like, I'm sure that read beautifully.
Yeah.
But right now I'm just looking at fake saggy breath.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking the entire time. It's like, bet the book was good. Like, honestly, I bet the book was good. What movie do you think that has been adapted from a book has done well?
Many. Jaws. Psycho.
Was Jaws a book?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
But pulp books. I think that novels, there are examples and people will point to them. Godfather. But like, I think that pulpy books tend to adapt better into films because they are driven by the same thing. They're driven by action.
Mm-hmm.
Film is driven by action.
Yep.
Great novels.
Mm-hmm.
Are driven by the internal conflict, and it's very, very hard to put that in a film. So, like, this adaptation was just like the beats of the story of the book, but that's probably not what made the book special.
No, I agree.
So I think pulpy things, I think...
I'll say just very quickly, one of my favourite books is Lovely Bones.
Yes.
Not a great film.
I watched that film for the first time like 2 weeks ago.
Not a good film. They don't do it justice. They really don't. I will say that Stanley Tucci...
is so good.
Is so good. But no, I don't think it works. I don't. And same thing with The Dressmaker, another really, really good book. Not great for the movie.
Because
that is all about internal. It's all about what the characters are going through. The Dressmaker, Rosalie Ham, very good book. And the film just doesn't get it.
I think it's just the sort of thing of like, in the act of adaptation, you can't just tell the story. Mm. You have to go, what is special about this book?
Mm.
And then use the language of film. I think a great adaptation, I've not read the book, but a great adaptation is We Need to Talk About Kevin.
I've not seen it.
That is a great, great film. And so the book is written all from the perspective of, it's, I think, letters. It's written as letters to the father character. It's written by the main character, right?
Mm.
The film, so it's all first person. Mm. The film has no reference to the letters, has no narration, has no none of that, right? And people are like, that's wild. But the film is really, really, really effective. And
that's cool.
I love the film. It's a full-on film. But people I know that have, like, it asks what's special about this book and then it makes a new piece of art.
Mm.
Whereas just, like, if like they'd done that, like they would have had to, there's bits in this where it's like writing.
It's it's fucked. This is completely off topic, but
I'm vibing. Sorry, guys, get set. We're doing. This is gonna be a 2-hour one.
No, it's not. It really isn't. Just you talking about that particular film/book about the letters and stuff. It reminded me of a documentary called Love Gilda. Have you seen it? It's the story of Gilda Radner, and all. It's kind of based around a bunch of letters or diary entries that they found that she would always sign Love Gilda, and the diary entries are read by SNL actors.
Oh, wow.
And it's her life story. And Gilda Radner is very good.
That's great.
Yeah. And just made me remember that. And now I want to watch it again.
It's just, I think the thing is, a good book doesn't necessarily make a good film.
No, I agree.
Although the bones of this story could have made a really great film.
I think it could have made a very good miniseries. I think these books need time. They gave it 2 hours and 20 minutes.
I think it's a long film. I think it's a long film, but I think of it reminded me in parts of other things. It reminded me of Moonlight, which is a beautiful, beautiful story told over many, many, many years of two people and a forbidden love and everything. It reminded me of, I keep forgetting its name, even though it's one of my favorite movies, Brokeback Mountain, which similarly tells a story That's a movie set over 20 years. If they had been able to simplify it down to these two people and their love over 20 years, it could have been a great film. Because I can think of two examples of films that have told similar stories that are two of my favourite films.
Mm.
And that's Moonlight and Brokeback Mountain.
No, you're right.
And it's just like...
It's funny you say the Brokeback Mountain thing because that makes a lot of sense. But it's similarly, with Brokeback Mountain, it's what you don't see.
Yeah.
You get to know these two characters in particular, four arguably with Anne Hathaway and Michelle Williams, so well by how this movie is made and written and shot that they don't just need dicks. They don't just need Heath Ledger's dick.
But I mean, like they go there. I mean, those scenes are like much more sexy than.
Yes, I agree. But they didn't just go, well, we need to show that they've had sex or that they want to have sex.
Yeah.
So we'll just do a shot of Heath Ledger's dick, and then I reckon that'll be enough. It's like, it's not enough. It's not enough.
What's interesting, though, is Brokeback Mountain is an adaptation of a novella.
Mm.
And that's of note because the story of the novella is kind of the same story. Like, it's the right kind of length.
Mm.
When you're chopping down a novel, it's a bit of a beast, I think.
I agree.
Yeah, wow.
Should we do our leg with Starmos?
Yeah.
We didn't talk about Johnny Legs much in this film, but
Johnny Legs isn't in this film that much.
No. No.
I wanted more Johnny Legs. Johnny Legs in the lead would have been better.
I agree. But I was just thinking when you were saying that before, if Johnny Legs was in the lead, think of Johnny Legs doing all the things Javier Bardem does in this film. Would it make you I don't like that?
Yeah. No, look, I actually think Benjamin Bratt would have been better.
I think that's brilliant.
Brilliant. No, I think that's really the flip. I think you need someone that's just like, well, here's what they could have done. They could have done the Moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
They could have done it like, they could have gone, all right, three periods. We have them as old people, we have them as in the middle, and we have them as young, and let's cast three different people. Or they could have done the Brokeback Mountain and just had it through. But they needed...
I'm going to watch Brokeback Mountain tonight.
Oh, I love that film. Mm. But they needed romantic leads. Yes. Like, I love Javier Bardem, and he was right for the middle and the end as this sort of, like, kind of he had this weird sort of...
Mm.
But he just goes skeezy.
I think as crass as it sounds and as funny as it sounds, truthfully, I think that they didn't focus enough on the Florentino-Fermina relationship and focused way too much on the boobs.
Yeah.
But that is the issue.
It was just stuff happening. It was just happening for 2.5 hours. Yeah. And just like it should have been this like sense of these two people that were perfect.
Yes.
And just they never come back together and like – get to that and then build out from there.
Yeah, I agree.
Probably too good of a book.
Mm.
Probably too good of a book that if you did an adaptation that was like what we're talking about, it would have been too different from the book and everyone would have been like, I think they were stymied by a good book.
I agree. I'm giving this two Leguistamos.
Yeah, I agree. Two Leguistamos.
Yeah, I think we gave like one Leguistamo or one and a half Leguistamo for The Counselor. Is that what it was called? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That movie sucked ass. This film, at the very least, Leguizamo had a character,
mm-hmm.
and Leguizamo is an excellent character actor. And he played a angry, controlling father very well. He had very cool facial hair. He's Dad Guizamo, I would say, but also riding on that Daddy Guizamo.
I think he was very much in the Daddy Guizamo realm.
So we've got Land of the Dead, which was 2005. And this was 2007. So I think we've hit Daddy Guizamo. So it's sexy dad.
Yeah.
And he is hot. Like, straight up, he's hot.
He wears a jaunty hat at one point. I can't express how many attractive people are in this film.
Oh, yeah, everyone's
this
hot.
This is all wonderful actors that don't get enough opportunities.
Mm.
They're all beautiful,
mm-hmm.
Let down by some old British man just like, oh, we're going to have some boobies here.
Jesus Christ. Like I said, I don't like shit on Johnny Legs' films. I'm a sucker for a love story. But this one just didn't really bloody butter my bread.
Mish, I give this film 2 Leguistamos. I think all art, when you boil it down, is about sex and death.
Mm.
This was a film about love and cholera. Close, but no cigar.
Very good. Very good. Hey, Zach.
Yeah.
See ya.
See ya.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.